Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Haddit.com Radio Show. Haddit.com Radio is an in-depth look at all things VA. If you need help with the VA, log on to Haddit.com. Now, here's your host, Gerald Cook.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, on this 14th day of February, 2019, for all you gals out there, I want to wish you a happy Valentine's Day. Hope you don't get too mad at your old man. He forgot you. Mind him next year. Maybe he'll get it then. Anyway, we're here today with our co-host, Jay Basser, and our guest speaker today is Dr. Craig Bash. He's a veterans medical advisor. So, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in. Our number is 347-237-4819. Now, that number, once again, is 347-237-4819. And then you'll hear some lady talking. Just hit one while she's talking or after she talks or whatever. That'll bring in the queue with us. So feel free to call in. How are you doing today, Dr. Bash?
I'm doing good. Hey, I'm kind of worried about this new VA process and the way they're going to try and process claims, you know. My biggest concern is
we've been talking about that for a good while.
Yeah.
It being new, it's always of a concern to me. It takes them so long to get the bugs worked out of things. And is it even feasible? Who knows? Are they going to make the process better or are they going to make it worse? It's just...
The thing I worry about is trying to put in new evidence, you know? It's like one of those pathways talks about how you can go for a higher level review, but you don't get to put new evidence in, you know? And then, so new evidence would be like my medical opinion or the, new medical data and so on. So not having new evidence could really hurt the claim because oftentimes veterans doesn't know what he needs and, medical testing gets better over time and so on. They have a better chance of success with more evidence, I think,
What I run into, Dr. Bash, all through my claim, they were sitting on the evidence that I needed. And by the time I'd get my hands on it, it would be several years down the road, and then I'd have to submit it. And it coming from the VA. And to me, that's problematic. When they mention that you can't put in new evidence, many times it's years before you know it's there. Of course, they can never find it. You have to give them the page number and everything else. I mean, you got to nail it down for them, put it in their hand before they'll consider it. Now, medical evidence, such as what you provide, that's a little different, but the evidence in your records, because they won't go hunt for it, and even if you tell them it's there, they'll just say they can't find it or it don't exist. And when you realize it really does, it could be 5, 6, 7 years down the road.
Yeah, and some of the VA people have told me that they won't let them do new testing. Like, in the old days, if they had a question about some issue, like if they needed a chest X-ray or they needed an expert opinion, they go out and get it. But they've told them now, if there's no, if the evidence isn't there, just deny the case. And if they won't allow new evidence, it makes it very difficult for the veteran to be successful, like you're talking about.
Oh, they won't be successful.
Yeah.
Unless they get a VA doctor to work with them, which is that's not very likely.
So my philosophy now is I'm trying to do a lot of these cases with the evidence up front, you know. So like in the old days, I might write an opinion and say that this was this way because of this reason and that we might need a certain test. So what we do now is we're trying to get the testing done ahead of time. Like I might get a podiatrist to weigh in. I might get a neurologist to weigh in behind me. I might get a pulmonary doctor. So by the time the claim's ready to put in, I have my opinion, plus I might have three or four of the doctor opinions behind me with all the needed evidence, you know.
Well, the way it's structured now, I can see that that's about the only way you have to go, isn't it?
Try and get in up front, right, which is hard because veteran, you know, it's costly and so on, time-consuming. But the other thing is that they might have that thing called a supplemental appeal, you know, if one of those pathways has a supplemental appeal.
Uh-huh.
So I think the supplemental appeal, my thought was that in the supplemental appeal, I might do another medical opinion with a new medical test. Like I might order a new chest x-ray, or we might have a new, you know, pulmonary function test or something like that. So it would be relevant. Because the VA is going to say if it's not relevant, they're not going to admit it. And then another way to do it would be to get a second physician behind myself to, you know, to have two-way opinions. So Dr. Bash says this and Dr. Jones says that. So that's another piece of new relevant information, which would allow new information to get into the file. I guess you can do that like three or four times. And then after that's over, if you're still unsuccessful, then you got to maybe wait until the BDA, which could be years, like you're talking about, 6-7 years, you know.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, too, because, you know, if the BA would really honestly work with a veteran, they got his doggone bond. They know what's went on. They shouldn't have to depend on the veteran to tell them, you know, dig it out themselves somehow.
Yeah.
And they send out. Go ahead.
These radar guys told me they're trying to do things so fast that if the radar asks for information and tries to get a test, it slows the case down, so they're trying to put the workload on the patient, which is not right. That's what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they're doing. And many times a patient, they don't remember years back or something could have happened. It might be in the records. And I have found getting a proper claims file out of the VA is really difficult. I went through 5 different claims files. They put on CDs for me, and each one gets larger. And,
how does that work?
And here, this is additional information could have been utilized from the get-go. Yeah. It's, you know, there's something seriously wrong with that. You should have a real-time claims folder that you can look at. Now, I know they have them for some of the BSOs and stuff, or claims practitioners. They can get that access, and lawyers, but a veteran can't get it.
Yeah, because once a veteran gets it, they didn't get to some expert, you know, like myself. You know, Secretary McDonald was very good at that. We used to write a letter to him, and he could get the claims file in a couple of days, and FedEx it out on a disk. But, you know, the VA can do that if they want to, but they don't really seem to be that invested in that process. You know, a lot of the data inside the records is not being looked at. You're right. So that's one of those things I was going to touch on a little bit. CUE, Bill Krieger wants to come on in a month or so and talk about CUE in a deep way. But, you know, some of the examples that I find on the medical side is that they don't look at the understand the terms, you know. Like somebody will have a little fracture in their spine called a Pars defect, and the raters will go by it and don't realize it's a spine fracture, you know, up to CUE. Or things like reactive airway disease, they'll miss reactive airway disease. It says RAD in the record, and it's, you know, precursor for asthma. So, or they'll miss, you know, some of the stuff with the nerve distribution in the hands for spinal cord, and, you know, confuse the C6 and C7 roots. Bill's got a good case on that. So not only is the record not maybe presented as well, the raters aren't looking at it as carefully as they could, you know, to find these details that can make a big difference in the case. And that's all about trying to do these cases. I heard they're trying to get Raiders to do cases in 30 minutes now. Really pushing them fast to get things out the door, work products. So, a lot more sloppy evidence.
Well, they sure ain't done mine in 30 minutes. But anyway, it's a new process, Dr. Bash, and it's got to be proven up. And if they can't prove it up, and it, pretty soon we're going to find out, because when everything is piled in this, what's this new process? I keep wanting to call it fracking, but
ramp.
But it, you know, it all, like when they claim they made such a headway on the claims process, it all went to the appeals. And I think that's what you're going to see here with the fracking program, or I mean, ramp program, is everything's going to pile up in the ramp program, and they're not going to be able to meet the timelines that they have indicated. That'll tell the tale.
Yeah.
I understand they're already getting behind rather quickly.
Well, I saw a case last week that came through. They're already starting to talk about the relevant evidence. They said that the information that was presented wasn't relevant, so they're gonna discharge. Like the veteran puts in redundant evidence or puts in, you know, literature and things like that, they're just gonna say it's not relevant and push it back. So that relevant evidence is gonna be an interesting definition.
Well, that could be detrimental to a veteran for sure, because I can certainly understand there could be relevant evidence out here, articles, newspaper articles, or you run across memos, all sorts of different things. I mean, the list could go on, I imagine. Just because a Raider don't think it's relevant don't mean that it isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Raiders are being pushed a lot on that M21, too, you know. And Krieger was talking about that a little bit. He said that the M21 oftentimes doesn't relate itself very much to what the laws are. So the VA kind of makes up their own kind of internal rules and puts in the M21, and the Raiders follow it, but they're not really necessarily backed up by the legislature, you know. So
I've had arguments with them, you know, and say, look, if you just read this thing, here's what it says. And they say, well, no, that ain't my interpretation. And it'd be something, you know, so obvious that it's crazy. But the ramp program, I think, will show its ugly face here in 6 months, less than a year. It's going to be so, like I said, there'll be 500,000 behind there. They're waiting. And they're just changing names of the same problem. They're just giving it a new name.
Yep. So Jay Baster wanted to talk about, he said something about vascular things, right, Jay?
Yeah, speaking of vascular.
Cardiac.
A little bit of heart disease and a little bit of PED, things like that, peripheral artery disease. It's kind of generalized discussion on that. So those issues, I mean, there's a lot of vets that got these issues, and a lot of them don't realize they got it. They don't know what's going on, so.
You have to think about etiology. One etiology is something that's toxic in the blood vessels, you know. So we talk about, Agent Orange, or talk about maybe diabetes with high sugar levels, you know. So those toxic things can cause the vessels to react in an inflammatory way. And so that's why you might have ischemic heart disease where the vessels get narrowed, and you might have basically ischemic changes in the legs, you know, peripheral artery disease, arteritis obliterans. And so it's kind of the same common pathway. And I'm sure, I haven't looked at it closely, but we know diabetes causes changes in the brain, you know, and so even though it's not well rated, but you could get things like dementia and, you know, these mini strokes could be all due to those same kind of vascular changes, you know, in the brain. So then the end organ kind of responds the same way. When you don't have enough blood to whatever organ it is, it starts to lose function. So like in the heart, you might get, you know, angina, chest pain. In the legs, you might get this thing called claudication, where you walk a certain distance, you know. So then the VA tries to, go ahead.
Is there any treatment for that if you got like hardening of what they call hardening of the arteries, especially in your legs? Is there any special medication a person can take?
Yeah, well, it all kind of depends exactly what the cause is. You know, there's lots of ways they get sort of overlapping problems. So if you have high blood pressure, that can cause some arterial narrowing and, you know, the hardening of the arteries classically. And if you have high sugar, that can cause problems. And if you have toxic exposure, that can cause problems too. And those things, so you might have sugar, you might have all three of them. You might have sugar, you might have some Agent Orange, you might have some blood pressure. So if you can treat part of them, you know, get the blood pressure down, you know, maybe fix your cholesterol in some ways, you know, get that corrected, and then some of that stuff can be reversed a little bit. The toxin stuff from Agent Orange is probably a little bit more sort of concrete, not as reversible, but the body's always trying to make things better, so if you can optimize the environment. But there's no real magic bullet. You know, if you have a real single narrowing, that's where you get those stents, and they do vascular surgery and put new vessels in to try and correct that stuff, you know. But a lot of this can be chronic.
What about, you know, it gets so bad your feet go numb. I know several veterans that they claim their feet went numb. That's a serious situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge problem. You know, the vessels, there's little small blood vessels, vasovasorum, that run along the side of the nerves. So when the blood vessels start to get damaged, those little vessels that run, supply the nerves get damaged, you know, maybe even early, and then you get those problems with the nervous system. You know, you get that peripheral neuropathy from different causes. You get numb feet, and you have loss of balance, and you may have to use a cane, you may fall, and you know, you get yourself into high levels of SMC based on loss of use and loss of balance, and, you know, not even amputation or spinal cord. It can be based on peripheral neuropathy. And, yeah, it's a very serious. You can cut your foot off, you can burn it, you get infected. People can die from all those secondary complications.
Oh, that's serious. Yeah, it makes it's not really possible to go in there and do what they call rooter, or go up there and clean the plaque and stuff out, because if you chip that plaque up and it starts breaking loose, of course it could cause a stroke. Or worse yet, it could kill you.
Yeah, a stroke. If it's in the legs, you get a stroke in your leg, you might lose your foot, you know. And the plaque, it depends on what the process. Some processes are continuous, like a freeway jam all the way down the freeway, and other processes are more like a bottleneck at an intersection, you know. So if you fix the red light, you can fix some of those different things. That's why we do imaging and angiograms to try and find out exactly what's going on there. Can try and tailor the treatment, you know. But the VA rates those things. They kind of rate them both. You know, Krieger's not here as a rater expert, but they kind of rate them on function. You know, like in the legs, they talk about the claudication, the pain that you get over a certain distance. And they measure like 100 yards and give you a certain number. And then they also measure it based on this ankle brachial index. They take the blood pressure in your wrist and compare it to your leg, and they should be pretty close, even though it's a little bit different distance. And if that index is less than 0.9, they can give you a higher percent, like 20%. You know, same thing in the heart. If you have the heart, ischemic heart disease, then they'll get the rate you based on METs, you know, metabolic units. And so you can measure that by how far you can walk or can climb stairs, and they'll give you different levels. There's a little chart you can look at. Or they can put you on a treadmill and measure your oxygen and try and get an idea of what's going on that way.
Oh,
but
my.
Anybody who has chest pain, yeah. any patient has chest pain or leg pain when they exercise or work out, that should be an indication that they might have these ischemic, these places where the blood's not getting to that organ, you know, the leg or the heart.
Okay. Got a question, Dr. Bash. Now, what if you have those symptoms, symptomology, and you know you have that, but say your cholesterol, you know, you have it checked regularly and your cholesterol is in good shape. You know, you've been taking some anti-statin medication or whatever.
Yeah.
What would be the factor in that issue?
You could look. You're trying to separate cholesterol problems versus the problems you might get from Agent Orange or diabetes, right? What you're talking about. Trying to split out those processes.
Yeah, rule out.
So, so it's like a process of elimination. So, you know, if your cholesterol is good and it's been good, then that might be a less likely problem, but then you can check the blood sugars and see what that's like, and then check what the toxin history is, check the blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And then you can also, you know, you can do some manual testing where you measure the pulses in the leg and see if they're mm-hmm. normal. And then, you know, if you're confused about it, then you can get that test, that ankle brachial index test, and see how that works out.
Mm-hmm.
If that's low, then you have, sometimes you get in a situation, oftentimes actually in medicine, where you have two processes that can give a similar result, you know. And so in a case like that, I always, you know, tie goes to the veteran. So if I would say something like the patient had some high cholesterol, but now it's under control, and we know that cholesterol could contribute to this process, but we also know that he's exposed to TCE or Agent Orange or has diabetes, and that could also do it. And so, you know, in my opinion, it's impossible to tell which one was causation. And the veterans should get credit for either one of them. No.
How would 35 years of uncontrolled hypertension fit in the mix?
Yeah. Same thing. High blood pressure causes the same kind of deal. It causes those arteriosclerosis damage. The blood pressure damages the intima of the wall, and then the intima gets a little bit damaged, and then the plaque can stick to it. Like, you know, if you have high cholesterol.
Oh, okay.
It also depends on the size of the
sandpaper.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of depends on you know, turbulent flow, like in places where you have intersections. There's a lot of turbulent flow, and that can cause the plaque to build up, like the bifurcation in the carotids is a classic place. Now we have turbulent flow. And that turbulent flow also is what causes aneurysms to form oftentimes in those junctions because it makes it a little bit weak there. You know, so, you know, the chronic hypertension can be a contributor to it. Yeah, the size of the particles makes a difference, too. So they're starting to do MRI scans, so microscopic type of MRI, measure the size of the particles. And it turns out that not all the cholesterol particles are made the same, and some are kind of fat and juicy, and some are kind of small and thin, you know, little. And so they talk about the LDLs are smaller type particles, but there's even some breakdowns in those. So what happens is the small little particles can get through the wall of the vessel. So if you have that turbulent area or you have some, you know, damage to the wall, the little small particles can get inside there and start to build up the plaque in the subintimal area. Whereas the big, fat, little juicy ones, like, you know, they might be like dump trucks. They just kind of roll by and they can't get in. They can't get in and cause damage. So it's not just the raw number of particles. Also, it has to do with the size of them. So that's why if you take different types of medications or even vitamins, you can change the particle size. And then when you do that, then you can actually start to change the vessel, you can get some reversal or some of that stuff.
Well, that could actually affect your brain if you started getting plaque build up in your brain.
Yeah. Anything that happens in the heart and the legs is going to happen in the brain. You know, it might not be quite as obvious. But on MRI scan, we see a lot of that. Like if you take an MRI scan of somebody who's had diabetes for a lot of years, you'll see a lot of these little tiny areas of increased T2 signal, which can be caused by hypertension or often diabetes, and you get little microscopic damage to the brain that you don't really know about. And that may be part of that aging process where the brain doesn't work quite as well or the memory's not quite as good. It might just be these small little changes in the brain that have occurred because of, you know, the blood vessel pathology that we don't really, you know, pay that much attention to maybe in the brain.
Wow. Looks like it's a rough way to go. It But most of that can be service connect. I mean, you know, if you can evidence exposure to something or Agent Orange or whatever.
Yeah.
It can be service connected.
Yeah. Anything else good? Because the service connection is part of it. You get benefits for rating decision, but also, you know, that service connection process helps people identify, you know, in the hospital because, you know, a lot of these patients now are being cared for by nurse practitioners and PAs, you know?
Yes.
So those guys aren't going through the detailed analysis to try and find the root cause oftentimes. And so if you get service connected for some sophisticated process, say maybe you have TCE in your brain that showed up as these changes, then that gets in your medical record. And then the nurse practitioner and the PA goes along and can see that and can read about it and then try and think about how to treat it. They're not going to necessarily find it, but they might be able to treat it a little bit if they know that it's there, you know what I mean? So it could change your whole way of being treated based on your rating.
Well, that's right. If they know what the symptoms are, like you say, they may not know exactly where it's at, but I would say if a guy's foot is numb, it's bound to be in their leg somewhere, or even at the foot, or, you know, various locations there. And if they're giving them treating a symptom with some sort of medication, I don't know what kind of medication they'd treat it with, but I would suspect you'd know pretty quick if you started getting feeling back that they were doing the right thing.
Making an effect, yeah. Yeah, part of the problem is that the visits are so short now, too, you know, so you have a nurse practitioner, a 15-minute visit, and the patient comes in with, they might have high blood pressure, you know. So the whole visit is rolling around and talking about the high blood pressure, whereas the patient also had on this list the numb foot, like you're talking about. Well, the numb foot, I see case after case now where the patient goes in with a new medical problem to a medical visit, and the doctor and the nurse practitioner and PA just ignore the new finding. Like the patient will say, I've got a numb foot, or the patient will say, I'm not urinating very well. The patient will say, I've got blood in my stool or whatever. And the doctor and the nurse practitioner, PAs are just ignoring it because if they acknowledge that problem in the medical record and then they don't work it up, you know, with a two-hour workup and do a bunch of testing, then they're like liable for malpractice. So they're just treating the one problem the patient comes in with, and they're really ignoring the other new issues. It's crazy bad medicine. Crazy bad medicine.
That is bad medicine. And I've seen that. I've seen that very thing because I'm told them at the VA, you know, different things, and they just go right over top of it and keep going.
It's not the, yeah, it's not the VA only.
No follow-up.
Yeah, civilian sector is doing the same thing because it's the short visits, you know. It's actually being propagated in the medical schools because I've had medical students tell me that the resident told them when the patient comes, only deal with one problem. You only deal with one problem and get them out the door, you know. So that's becoming a systemic problem throughout all of medicine, and it's not, you know, it's just not very good. Even the guys that do stuff like I do, the ratings, you know, the medical opinions. Like I had a guy today that went for an opinion, and the guy gave him one, you know, gave him one issue, you know, and I had like 15 issues I picked up, and I, you know, some of them are really spine, you know, things that he has that he's got to get rated for, and you know, so you know, if the doctors, even you know, in the rating process, are only doing one issue, and the doctors in the hospital are doing one issue, and you know, the PAs and nurses are only doing one issue, it's really bad for the patient because patients have more than one issue; they have many issues that simultaneously happening.
Well, that's a kiss of death, I think. One issue. Yeah.
Even the Raiders,
they better have
Raiders
an hour
when they
want to
get their work. The Raiders tell me when they want to get their workload, some of my patients are Raiders, you know. So like when they want to get their workload out, they, you know, they can go through the National Archive, the, you know, the big bank of cases, and they can try and cherry pick. They can cherry pick the cases with one or two issues and get their workload and get their work unit credits up. And if cases with five or six or ten issues they walk by and they just keep floating around the system because nobody wants to touch them. You know.
Yeah.
Bad. So, back to that cardiac, you know, a patient very likely could have, see a doctor's question, you know, they could very likely have cardiac disease. They very likely could have peripheral vascular disease. And they very likely could have cerebral vascular disease all at the same time. So that's three, those are three monster big issues that to work up from a medical standpoint require a lot of testing and, you know, a lot of different expertise and treatment and surgical options. You know, it's a big deal.
Well, you have to, when you, a veteran goes into their primary care team, they have to insist on getting listened to. I know they want to get you in there and out of there, but if you have several major issues, you want to discuss them all and just don't let them rush you out the door because that's your time, too. I mean, they might say, look, you can only spend 10 or 15 minutes with a veteran, but if it takes more than that, it takes more than that.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's why the old days you had doctor visits, you waited in the hallway a lot, you know. But the, I think what I would do if I was patient, when I go in, I get a list. You know, I used to always tell my patients to make a list and give it to the doctor and he could look at it while I was reading. But now I think I would take that list and give it to the, you know, give it to the people. Like you could fax it in and get in your medical record before you go and send a list in afterwards and say, look, I had six problems and the doctor only went over three of them. And just document this stuff because otherwise, if the doctor doesn't, or the nurse practitioner just ignores it and never notes it in the record, then it was just a verbal conversation between them and it never is, it's never documented, you know?
Yes,
you got to get it in
the
record
right.
Somehow.
Yep, tell them, put it in your record.
Yeah.
And I've done
I've had
that
patients,
too.
Yeah, I've had patients that don't leave, they won't leave the hospital until they get to see their record and make sure it's right for what they said and what they wanted to be done, you know?
And it pays to always get a copy of your progress report. That's beneficial. But, yeah, you have to be pretty determined. You have to say, look, you know, we need to talk about this. And usually when I go in, I usually take up an hour, but I know a lot of veterans don't. They're in and out. And I wonder what in the world they go in there for. Get a drink of water.
Yeah, get a refill prescription out the door, you know. Nothing else.
Yeah. But you need to discuss all your issues.
Yeah.
And or as many as you can get them to discuss.
Yep. The other thing I do is if you have access to insurance, you know, another pathway. And sometimes they'll use two doctors, you know, like I'll have one doctor VA, one doctor insurance. And that way the, because all of us, all doctors, everybody has blind spots, stuff they don't see or understand or remember or whatever, you know. So get two or three issues with one doctor and get two or three issues with the other doctor and get overlap. And it's better for your health care and kind of prevents errors from happening, you know. But it requires resources and, you know, have to have a lot of veterans only have one pathway to go with the VA, so they're kind of stuck with the one, you know. So they got to try and, I think, try and document what their problems are before they go and make sure they get covered.
Yeah. I have outside doctors, and then I have my VA doctors. And between the two, and they work good together. So if my outside doctor says I need a prescription, he'll fax it straight to my primary care team, and they fill it. I managed to generate that, and that's really been beneficial for me. That's helped me a lot.
That's what I do with my VA claims. You know, like I'll suggest the patient needs XYZ, you know, for medical data, and the patient takes it to his VA doctor, and then they order the testing, right, that we need. And then boom, boom, boom. That's exactly what happens. It works perfectly.
Yes, and that's the way it should work. Now, Once your VA doctor gets to know you and know that you're not clowning around with them, usually they'll work with you, with your doctor you have outside. Where I have a Medicare and Medicare gap insurance, and
perfect.
I don't want to drive 100 miles to see my VA doctor and sit in the waiting room. I can go over here to mine and see him right now.
Yeah.
So it's really good, and I know that he can communicate, and the BA communicates with him. They send faxes back and forth. I think they set up a portal, actually, and exchange information. And like I say, it's been a blessing for me. And I would advise anyone going to the VA that had Medicare and gap insurance to do the same thing.
Doctors like it. On our side, we like it too because, all those different medical training and expertise, we learn from each other and we help each other, So if one doctor has an idea, then you run with it, It helps the patient get better.
Yeah, you're right there. It's a benefit for everyone if they work together. It works. I mean, just people ought to do it. But getting back to this ramp thing, Dr. Bash, have you had very much a good experience with it or much dealings with it?
Well, like I said, the main thing I've seen so far is I just see them start to talk about relevant evidence. They used to talk about new material evidence, but now I saw a couple of decisions where they're talking about relevant evidence, so they're starting to get it ramped up. And a couple of the decisions came out that are going to be in the RAMP format, because the RAMP has certain rules where they have to list the laws that apply, and they have to list the positive evidence. And so there's a couple of decisions I saw, it said positive evidence, none. They said none, and that's all they put. And then they said that the relevant evidence, there wasn't any new relevant evidence. So they got rid of the new evidence, and they said there was no positive evidence. So the decisions are going to be very kind of cut and dry. So when I send my stuff in, I'm going to document it. If this is positive, supportive evidence, and I'm going to say this is all relevant new evidence, so that they have to address it.
Oh, I did read something else, Dr. Bash, about they're coming up with a deal on foster care for veterans. Have you heard of that?
No. Tell me what you know.
Where a family can take a veteran in just like they would a foster child, only it'd be a foster veteran, I was reading an article on that, and they started it, as far as I can tell, up here and up towards Springfield there. They had a VA center there started it, and they was taking in, evidently homeless veterans or someone didn't have no one to care for them, and they were elderly, and they started a foster care program. Mount Vernon, Missouri is where it was started.
So veteran goes and there, the veteran can use their benefits for the family, and the family, does the family get any benefits from it, or they just provide
That I don't know yet. I just run into this the other day and was reading it, and I thought, for some veterans, it may turn out to be a good thing. have to learn more about it, but it's something new that they're working with.
Yeah.
So
we kind of have that informally. Yeah. Over the years, we've kind of had that informally where veterans helping veterans, like your radio show and stuff I do, we all help trying to help each other, you know?
Yeah.
This is a housing thing. We have room and board and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and help them with, you know, keep their meds straight and this and that. Now, it's not for every veteran, of course, but it would, you know, someone by themselves and they're up there in age and they just got to have help. It's certainly a family that would take them in or something like that. It could be very beneficial. Keep them off the street.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to see veterans out on the street passing away.
No. That's a win-win.
It could be a win-win for some veterans. Like I say, it wouldn't work for me. I got enough kids and grandkids. They better take care of me. Hope I ain't too sick to whoop them. But anyway, that is something that I've run into, and I wondered if you'd heard about the program.
Nope. I hadn't come across it. No.
Now I'll have to check it out further. But this ramp, like I say, it's going to take some doing to get it proved up to me. I got a bad feeling about it, and maybe that's just me.
Well, they get that higher level review thing too, you know, that they talk about. Which, if you go down that pathway, then you don't get to put new evidence in. And I don't know. I don't know why. Why a higher level review necessarily be any better than the first review, you know, if there's nothing new to look at. But if it's a DRO, like a DRO where they do a de novo review of the whole case. I had an interesting case, you know, people talk about CUEs, but I had a case with a guy who had CUE, and they wrote it up as like on his bowel. They didn't find, he had bleeding bowel, and they didn't work him up, and he had polyps. But they treated the polyps, so he got a 0% for polyp disease. But in the process of the CUE, the DRO looked up his record and found out that he had a CUE in his feet, flat feet, plantar fasciitis, and he got a 50% rating for his feet on his second. It was the second CUE off the first one. So, but you know, those DROs have a lot of time to look at those records. I think in a higher level review, they're just going to be sort of a cursory review again. It's not going to be an in-depth analysis. It might not really result in that much of a different outcome, you know.
Well, doggone. It go in for one thing, get rated for another.
That's good.
Yeah, that turned out good for him.
Yes, this higher level
know.
Review.
There's
also some psychology going on, because if it's in the same station, you know, if Smith is reviewing Jones's work and they live in the same building and work together for 20 years, you know, it's hard for them to be totally objective. You know, they kind of just maybe go along with the other guy. I think it's going to be hard to have a really good objective, higher level review, but we'll see.
Well, the problem I've seen is they take and look at the last Raider's decision and then they go from it.
Yeah.
They don't give their own opinion. They go from the last Raider's opinion, and that goes nowhere.
Yep, I have a case. I had a case today just like that. The guy had peripheral neuropathy, like we're talking about, on the basis of, and he also had spinal cord disease, and with leg neuropathy and radiculopathy and problems. So the first Raider, 10 years ago, looked at the record a little bit and saw that the guy was claiming peripheral neuropathy. The Raider looked at the record and said, oh, he has spinal cord disease. that's not peripheral neuropathy. That's a different type of neuropathy. So he said the record doesn't have the diagnosis and denied it. One sentence. The record doesn't have the diagnosis and denied it. He never looked at the rest of the record to see that peripheral neuropathy was already diagnosed 5 years before. So then the second rater comes along and does the same thing. You know, it says, you know, yeah, it's longer, yada, yada, yada. You know, no diagnosis and denies it. And the third guy, he had three denials the same way all the way down. So it's probably going to be a CUE case because they obviously didn't read the record and see that he had peripheral neuropathy along with spinal cord, two processes, you know, one disease. It's back to that idea of one disease again. He had two diseases.
My lands. Well, that's what we're running into. That's one of the major problems, I think, I'd say, with the claims process is the first rater and then the second rater and the third rater, they're all reading the same doggone and writing the same, nearly the same report. And they change a word or two and that's it. But it's actually the same doggone finding.
Yeah.
It's just because they didn't want to do their job.
Right.
They just copy what this one done. So the system has generated a quagmire on its own doing. It's by design. I mean, they're lazy.
Yeah.
They don't want to read the report and give a factual finding or opinion.
And
that's hurt a lot of veterans. So, but means we know that it's something that you can keep fighting with, although it can go on for years before you get someone with a third grade education that can read something. Not to badmouth the BA, of course.
Well, the Social Security is kind of going to the same thing. They kind of shifted their analysis, and they're trying to look for more objective things, and they're using nurse practitioners and PAs. And, you know, that just the fact that they use those type of trained people makes the analysis more shallow just based on who they use to look at it, you know. They're not going to go as deep. They don't have the same knowledge base, and they're not going to understand the interconnections of everything. So,
well, that's true. They're not educated. They haven't been educated to what to look for in reading these progress report, medical reports, and this and that they get from doctors and hospitals and everything else. Usually the data's all there. It's just they're not paying attention to it, or they just don't know what they're reading. They don't understand.
Right.
But anyway, I'm looking, I'm hoping the ramp program will work, but right now I don't have too much faith in what I've seen so far.
Yeah, so like I said, my strategy is going to be to try to get as much medical testing data as I can up front, you know, when we first get the claim in. And the second thing I'm going to try and put in relevant, try and get in relevant, you know, testing and more relevant evidence along the way.
That's the only option I see you have, Dr. Bash, get it all in up front that you possibly can.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually there's other things lurking in the background, but at least if you can get the ball going, someone will pay attention to it. But it's got to be there in the beginning.
If they don't look at it, you know, on the first claim, if they deny it and you reapply for another claim, then anything else you put in can be new information. So maybe a lot of these claims will go in. You know, if ramp is really fast, they bring them in, they deny them quickly, the patient reapplies with a new claim and new evidence, maybe that's the way to do it too, you know. It's cumbersome, you lose retroactive, but might get the rating right.
I think you're right. They do. They do lose their retroactive. But you know, if you get a speedy reply, you know, it wouldn't mean that much. But if you go on for years,
that's a big deal.
Then it can turn into quite a sum. And it seemed like the longer a claim runs, the harder it is to get it, get a satisfactory result out of it. And that's just the way the system works. They'll play with it for a while. Maybe they'll get it squared away, but last I heard, they was already having quite a backlog on the ramp, so
mm-hmm.
I don't know how they're going to be able to keep up with that.
You see these short decisions now, you know, and Krieger and I were talking about this today, that, you know, they'll list the evidence, so like, say, Dr. Bash's DBQ and letter, and then they won't ever describe it, talk about it, or expand on it in the decision, you know? So that's another fertile place for CUE, because if there's things in my letters or the medical record that they don't look at and don't describe that are positive that could change the outcome, then that's CUE, because they never really considered it. So in the speed that they're trying to do these cases now, there's going to be a lot of places where they're just going to blow by. They're going to list a bunch of medical evidence, and they're just going to blow by it with a, you know, boilerplate and make lots of mistakes.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's what it's going to boil down to. There's a lot of mistakes.
So I guess the way to fix that, if they go, say the ramp program sends out all these decisions that are error-filled, then there might be a huge increase in CUE cases, and then the VA is going to have to pay those cases anyway. So maybe that's the way that the patients can get a positive, you know, correct result out of the whole thing.
Well, let's hope there's some sort of recourse, because it sounds like they're already doing their thing. If there's no evidence, no evidence, no nothing, they only have one option, but that's to deny it. So that means
right.
the poor veteran's got to appeal it. And I don't know if it goes back to the regular claims process or what it does, but sooner or later, I'm surprised they haven't eliminated the claims process after you switch over the ramp.
Yeah, I think you're stuck. I think you're stuck with either filing a new claim, probably be filing a lot of new claims with new evidence, you know, start over again, or going to the BVA, which could take a long time, you know.
Well, that's going to eat up everybody's retro if they do that. And so the BA still comes out on top.
Right.
Whether it's intentional or not, you know, that's the way it's going to work out.
It might get hard to get lawyers to help you too, because if they eliminate all the retros through this process, then there's not a lot of incentive for lawyers to help, and veterans might have a harder time getting, you know, legal help if they want it. You know.
Yeah, well, that's another good point too. I don't know what it's going to take to make this thing work. The BA tried to get me to go ramp. They sent me the paperwork on it. Matter of fact, I spoke to the BA today, and they wanted me to, every time I talked to them, we want you to switch over to ramp. And I said, no, I'm going to leave my claim the way it is. It's been in the system so long now, switching to ramp, it would be, mean, you know, if you guys ain't done it now, you ain't going to get it done in a ramp period of time. And
they're really pushing ramp. I've had veterans get three letters in the mail about ramp, you know.
Yes. They are pushing it. Yes. Yeah. I told them, no, I've read through the paperwork, and I didn't like what I read, and I'm going to leave my claim in the process it's in. And I expect them to do their job properly. About all you can tell. I don't like the ramp. Some people may be okay, but for me it wasn't. I just gonna have to fight it out to the end, I guess. But they're sure pushing ramp really hard. Well, Dr. Batch, we're about out of time here. You want to give us your contact information?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Best way to get me is a Google. You know, Google Dr. Craig Batch and find all my websites and my videos. I go ABC News and another video. My video has stuff. But it's drbash@doctor.com, spelled out doctor, D-O-C-T-O.com. And then my scheduler guy is Skip. He's at 925-381-7561. So I talk to Skip like two or three times a day. He's called Skip up and tell him, hey, I want to talk to Dr. Bash, and he'll set you up in a time when I'm not typing, you know, or studying stuff. We'll have more time for calls. And that's usually like a day, you know, same day or next day. So 925-381-7561. Skip's in California. You can text him or you can call him, and he'll hook you up with me.
Okay, good deal. And Bill, he's fixing to come back. When did you say he was coming back?
Bill's going to come back in a month, I think, or so. So he's planning on coming in. He's got a couple of good CUE cases we can talk about in great detail with the VA regulations and the manual. So we're all
good
set
deal.
To be on, so,
yeah, he's sharp as a tack, ain't he? He knows
yeah,
that.
Bill, yeah.
Boy, he knows
yeah,
them
Bill
VA laws.
1976, so he's been doing it a while.
yeah, he's boy, he's sharp. I like hearing that. He knows them inside and out.
Yep. So Bill used to work at the local office, and he worked at the BVA, at the PVA at the appeals level, and he did a lot of work at the court, you know, back and forth to the court, and then he was at the VA, you know, central office for a while, for decades. So he's got lots of levels of experience too.
Yes, he does, and it shows. I mean, that's really, really a good deal. We're certainly glad to get him on too. And you've really gave us a lot of good information here, Dr. Batch, and we appreciate it. We want these veterans out here to know everything they possibly can, and. And let them know they're not alone. There's people that trying to give them information. Best, you know, if we can get our hands on it, we'll put it out there. So we'll just keep on keeping on.
All right. Well, happy Valentine's Day, everybody. See you later.
Yeah, same to you, Dr. Batch. And thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. I do appreciate
you. Hey, Bass, do you have any questions at the end? Anything you wanted to fire on?
No, he hit the topics pretty good. I just sitting back and soaking all the information in there. So, you know, if I have any questions, I'll contact Dr. Bass directly.
All right. Well. Next time we get the Blue Water Navy going on too, right? That's another whole other ballpark of stuff we can talk about one day. Maybe if you guys find the rules.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to take the VA is going to appeal that or not. I don't guess they can they? Can't that a done deal?
Yeah, let's move the goalpost 6 inches off the shore.
Well, I don't know. Sounds to me like a. They might have got what they wanted.
Yeah.
Let's hope so.
They ain't got nothing yet.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed for them. Okay, that's me.
Right.
Gerald Cook with Jay Basser, and we'll be, and thanks to Dr. Bash, we'll be signing off for now.
You've been listening to the Hadit.com Blog Talk Radio Show, sponsored by Hadit.com. All opinions expressed here are the opinions of the individuals appearing on the show and are not the opinions of Hadit.com or Blog Talk Radio. Tune in next time for another edition of Hadit.com Blog Talk Radio and the Ask Basher Show.
Goodbye.